How do you honor God? By doing everything to the glory of God. Not just not sinning, not just, okay, you don't steal from people, but by making good shoes.
If we're going to talk about you were a new creation, that means everything has to change.
Why does God not just, you know, bring people to heaven immediately after being saved? It's because there's stuff to do here. There's a point to all of this. And if we're Christians, we do it better, or at least in theory.
But if we really apply the standard that's set in Scripture, then we know that no one is good because no one is God.
We serve a storyteller. We serve a God who has a perfect plan, a sovereign will for every moment of history.
It's not about going into the world to make artists. It's about going into the world to make disciples.
Hey, hey, this is the Christian Artist, honoring Christ through creativity. My name is Caleb.
My name is Connor.
I'm Carly.
And
I'm Abe.
Yeah. And joining us today is AJ Colwell, our friend. We are excited to have him on to do some brainstorming and stuff, because AJ and I have had some conversations about stories and stuff. So when I was trying to figure out someone to join us, I was like, I think AJ would be a good pick. And it's already coming to fruition. He's already had some good ideas. So we're gonna go ahead and get started here. And this is like the second episode of our third speculative fiction trilogy. What is the speculative fiction trilogy? So we've done this. This is another third time doing it, and it is basically a three-part episode series that is basically brainstorming story ideas based off of the three starting points you could start with. So plot, character, or setting. We did plot last year when we started the third time going through this trilogy. We've been on a very long hiatus. We did it with Adam Schliessman, our good friend. Speculative fiction and plot. We did a classic hero's journey tale. It ended up being a urban fantasy Viking thing, which was amazing and awesome, and I still want to write it. And the whole plot of it was basically this guy having to learn how to be a man from all these Vikings, which is fun. But today we're going to do speculative fiction and characters. We're going to talk about how to brainstorm a story from a character starting point. So we're going to basically come up with some character ideas and then use those as jumping off points to brainstorm a story idea. And this is called the speculative fiction trilogy because these are going to be speculative fiction stories. So either fantasy, science fiction, or horror, or any of the genres that come out from that, any of the subgenres that are related. We've done cyberpunk, epic fantasy, and other stuff like that. We did an urban fantasy brainstorm at one point where we brainstormed an idea for a world where every genre of music had its own patron god, and these like gods of music were fighting amongst each other after Johnny Cash got murdered, and the god of country music got murdered, and like the new god of country music was some up-and-coming artist in Nashville who got promoted to godhood and then is figuring out like what is going on. It was so wild and awesome. But today, I don't know what this one's going to be, but the idea for this one, based off characters, is we're going to choose a random historical or popular figure. Each of us is going to choose one, and then use that as a jumping off point for character ideas to lead into a story. If you hear random baby noises, that's my son, Phineas. Carly will mute if he gets too annoying.
Yeah.
But
right now he's not annoying. Yeah, he's just happy.
Yeah, he's just happy. Yeah. You know, it's fine. Let's go ahead and get started here. Who wants to start? Who wants to be the first person to choose one of these? What I'm going to do is I'm going to generate this little website called randomlists.com. I'm at the random people section, and it's going to generate 8 different popular figures from either history or modern times. The person who is selected will have to choose one of these 8 figures to base a character around. I can get started. at the beginning, or someone else can start. Whatever you want to do. We could go in order of the overlay here, which would be me, Connor, Carly, AJ.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, let's do that. All right, I'm going to click randomly generate. And my choices are... Oh, man, I don't know any of these people. Okay, I'm gonna read them off, and maybe someone will jump out to me. Danielle Steele, don't know who she is. Roald Dahl, which is the writer of Willy Wonka and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, all those books. Ronald Reagan, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Cameron Diaz, Frank Zappa, Ray Romano, and Dave Matthews.
Or Dave, as hardcore fans call him.
Yeah, of course.
Go with Ronald Reagan.
I don't know a whole lot about Ronald Reagan. Honestly, the person I think I know the most about on this list is Ray Romano from Everybody Loves Raymond. I feel like I might choose that. That's kind of funny. I could definitely base a character off of Ray Romano. Okay, I'm gonna go for it. That's wacky and weird. Sounds good. So Connor, here's your list. You got some more historical ones here. Amelia Earhart, Moses, Sean Combs, Henry Kissinger, Marie Antoinette, Anne Hathaway, Aristotle, or The Rock. Dwayne The Rock Johnson. This is your list. Amelia Earhart, Moses, Sean Combs, Henry Kissinger, Marie Antoinette, Anne Hathaway, Aristotle, or The Rock. Wouldn't it be funny if we had chosen, you have to mix all these people together as one character?
There's no way.
Yeah.
The amount of complexity.
Yep. So we have Ray Romano, and who's joining our cast of characters?
Read them off again.
Amelia Earhart, Moses, Sean Combs, Henry Kissinger, Marie Antoinette, Anne Hathaway, Aristotle, and The Rock.
These options are awful. I guess I'm going to have to go with The Rock.
Now we're just like casting an imaginary movie.
I guess we are.
This movie starring Ray Romano and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Have they ever starred in a movie together? I don't think so. All right, Carly, here's your list. Serena Williams, Harrison Ford, John Bon Jovi, Neil Armstrong, Steve Jobs, Phil McGraw, which is Dr. Phil, Kenny Chesney, and Bruce Lee.
The one I know most about, like, character-wise, is Dr. Phil. I think I have to go with him.
This is what's so wild right now.
Not a bad list.
Ray Romano, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Phil McGraw in. Okay. AJ, here's your list.
Oh, no.
Let's see. Yeah, these are all actors. Bethany Frankel, James Earl Jones, Dwight Howard, Nicolas Cage, Christopher Nolan, I guess he's not an actor, but Tim McGraw, William Shatner, or Eva Longoria.
Oh no, I'm so uncultured.
And if we I feel like we've been able to choose people so far that we actually have some inkling of. If there's no one on this list that you know anything about, we can refresh the list.
Well, I got a pretty good image in my head of what Nicolas Cage is like, given that all his characters are the same.
Yep.
So if we want an interesting, boring character to add to the mix, then I'll have to go with him.
Nicolas Cage?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're casting an imaginary movie, and the actors starring in this movie are Ray Romano, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Dr. Phil, and Nicolas Cage. So I feel
you can
like
bring yourself to say it without laughing. Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. So I think probably the first place to start, right, would be to put these people in roles, right? In a story, right? So we have, I'd say like probably we have like protagonist, antagonist, support character, and what else? What do you think? I'm trying to think of like a fourth category. Right. I mean, support character could be several different things. So probably we have two different supporting characters that are different roles. So
could have like protagonist, antagonist, support, and then mentor. Which
perfect.
Is like just
yeah,
a different
there
type
that's,
of support.
That's what it is. It's like sidekick
I
and mentor.
I feel like Dr. Phil is probably the mentor, right?
I was hoping you were gonna say the antagonist.
So that's the thing though.
That would be
I don't know if we need to typecast these people, right? Like it would be maybe interesting if we like shuffled it around a little bit. So yeah, I think yeah, protagonist, antagonist, sidekick, and mentor are probably the four categories here.
Okay, for the actors, are we going off like a typical character that they play, or are we talking about the actual actor's personality? Because I don't know how many of us know the actual actor's personality.
I think at this point, because we literally all chose like just actors, we should probably just do it as if they are the actors cast in the imaginary movie. Right? We could probably at a later date, you know, some other time do a different version of this where it's like historical figures and it's like the actual people. But like for this, I feel like we're just casting an imaginary movie. Like seems like that's where the dice have lined up. If that makes sense to everybody else.
Yeah. Well, what I just did is I just Googled what people say Dwayne Johnson's personality is like. And
okay. That could also work.
It seemed to work.
I feel like all four of these people are pretty typecast. Typically, I don't think they typically play people outside of their roles. I mean, Dr. Phil isn't really an actual movie actor. He just plays a doctor on TV. Yeah. So,
yeah, he certainly pretends.
He does pretend. Yeah. Yes. I mean, the obvious, I think, castings here would be Dr. Phil in the mentor role. Ray Romano probably protagonist. No,
he's either the protagonist or the sidekick.
Or the sidekick. Yeah. Dwayne is either the sidekick or the protagonist, right? Really? Okay.
Nicolas Cage.
And Nicolas Cage is the antagonist. That I feel like that's like if we had to like what they would actually be. That's probably what it would be. Maybe Dwayne might be the antagonist. It would depend. But also that's like it could be too obvious. But what do you guys think? It is interesting.
I kind of like the idea of Dr. Phil being the antagonist. That sounds like an awesome plot twist.
It really does. It really does.
Here's another thing we can do to make this interesting so that we're feeling less like we're just like typecasting characters in a movie. What we could do is get another random list thing, or we could just think of it on our own of just something to add to these characters that it's to thrown into the mixing bowl, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to do like some sort of like personality quirk or like disability or you know something that just adds to who this person.
You know what it is?
This is what it should be.
This is what it should be. I'll regenerate the list and we'll go back through everybody. And instead of picking up an actor or whatever, you have to pick a historical figure, and the actor you've chosen has to play the role of that historical figure, right? So like if I chose Aristotle for my character, that means Ray Romano is a philosopher, right? That's where he fits. Does that sound good to everybody?
Well, I feel like we're making it into, okay, so what's the goal here for like, were we trying to create a story out of these characters?
Yes.
Or are we trying to create a movie casting joke out of these characters?
No, we're trying to create an actual story.
What was your answer to that?
I said, no, we were trying to create an actual story.
Oh, okay. So maybe we don't want to do...
Yeah, if we do that, it sounds like we're going to be taking basically the bodies of and the look of the actors.
Ray Romano, yeah.
But implanting these historical characters' personalities and I guess... Yeah.
What I feel purpose? Like that works, but
what adds to the character? Okay, all right.
No. So mainly, I'm thinking like again, role in a society, right? So that we can get a picture for like if this is a fantasy world, this is something sci-fi. If this is something else, where are we in a where do these characters fit into their society? was my thought.
You should pull up a random list of like careers then, or jobs. Or something.
That could work. Let's keep looking through randomlists.com. Let's see. What do you say? Vocations. Yeah, work. Here we go. Random jobs and job titles. Okay. Here we go. We'll do another eight. So, what's his face? Ray Romano has to be a surveyor, a pharmacist, a high school teacher, a massage therapist, a software developer, a reporter, an accountant, or a physical therapist.
Massage therapist, hands down. No doubt about it. 100% all the way, massage therapist.
So I think I'm going to make him, I get to choose this. I think I'm going to make him a reporter, right? So Ray Romano is a reporter. That opens us up to not necessarily have to be modern. I'm starting to get a feel for like, you mean like 1920s, something going on, right? So we have Ray Romano, like, yeah, with like a Jersey accent or something like that, like going through the streets of a 1920s alternate New York. Maybe there's vampires around. Who knows?
Can Dwayne Johnson, can I just choose that he's a cultist leader?
No, I don't think so.
Sad day. All right, I'm gonna have to hope for that.
I feel like we can be a little loose with the job descriptions, right? Like,
So if I get pastor, I can finagle that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, yeah, like reporter, journalist for Ray Romano. Connor, your options are insurance agent, urban planner, web developer, actuary, zoologist, truck driver, patrol officer, or actor.
Gosh. No, didn't get a cult leader. I don't know, insurance agent. That's pretty close.
Insurance agent, urban planner, web developer, actuary. I honestly have forgotten what an actuary is. Let me look this up.
I was about to ask the same question.
A business professional who deals with the measurement and management of risk and uncertainty. So kind of like an insurance guy. Except the other side of that coin. Zoologist, truck driver, patrol officer, and actor.
All right. Zoologist is too interesting.
Okay, all right. So we have Dwayne The Rock Johnson as some sort of animal scientist of some sort.
Or alien scientist.
Sure, yeah. Could be a xenobiologist, yeah.
You don't know.
We can be loose with that. Carly, Dr. Phil is either a writer, a loan officer, a database administrator, a paralegal, a recreational therapist, a systems analyst, an urban planner, or a farmer.
I feel like farmer.
I
just totally see him as a farmer
with the straw hat on and the little straw in his mouth. Yeah,
I feel like that could also tie into Connor's character a little bit somehow. So.
Yeah. Yep. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is trying to like develop a pesticide to help Dr. Phil's farm, and I'm writing a story on it for the local newspaper. All right, AJ, let's finish it out here. Who'd you get again? You got Nicolas Cage. Okay, Nicolas Cage is either a painter, an anthropologist, a recreational therapist, an actor, an automotive mechanic, a construction manager, an editor, or a statistician.
Sorry, I didn't hear the last three. A bird just flew into my window and scared. What are those last three?
The last three are construction manager, editor, and statistician.
Okay.
Nicolas Cage is the editor of the magazine that that Ray Romano reports to.
The one that jumped out at me was an artist, because painter. I can totally see painter. Yeah. I can see him with his monotone voice just describing this boring painting and
and it's actually totally beautiful, but he's like does a really bad job selling it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. Okay, so we have Ray Romano, the reporter, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the zoologist, Dr. Phil the farmer and Nicolas Cage the painter. Is there anything else we need to come up with, or can we start jumping off at this point? Like, I'm seeing some connections, at least, right? Specifically between Connor and Carly, right? Some, maybe, you know, my first inclination was pesticide for the farmer, but it could be something else.
Maybe I'm bioengineering animals that to give to Dr. Phil's farm.
Oh, so he's like a rancher more?
Yeah, like a rancher, and I'm bioengineering animals, and something goes wrong. Instead of there being...
So now it's Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Well, no, I was thinking, like, instead of there being a tail there, it turns into a tentacle. And...
Yeah, freaky cows, man.
Or zombie cows.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Do we have a time period for this? Are we thinking future? Or are we thinking historical in some sense? Are we thinking, like, it doesn't seem like it's fantasy because I'm a reporter and you're a zoologist, but.
Well, not necessarily. Magic systems are always able to make reporters exist in strange ways.
Mm-hmm.
My first inclination with, like, if Connor's character is going to be like dabbling with biology in that kind of a way, my first thought was like the era that Frankenstein was written for. I don't remember exactly what that was, but that kind of historical time period.
I think it was the 1800s. I think I think Frankenstein was written in 1818. Originally? Yeah, 1818. So yeah, early 1800s. The Gothic era, I could see that. We could go with the more crazy scientist in an Enlightenment sense. Go full Monsters from the Id here.
I just looked it up, and in the 1700s is the time period that she intended when she wrote the book.
When the book was set in. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. I feel like maybe what we do now is we maybe just like put the roles together now, like who's protagonist, antagonist, psychic, and mentor based on the role on the jobs that we have. But I'm down with it being kind of like historical. My first inclination was like urban fantasy. Anyway, so
yeah, let's do it.
So I'm trying to think, is Dwayne the protagonist? Like, is he like is this story revolving around a scientist trying to solve a scientific problem, or is the scientific problem the impetus for a hero to stop it?
What's Nicolas Cage's job again?
A painter.
He's a painter.
Painter.
I'm thinking like Bob Ross kind of painter.
yeah, nature painter. Yeah, very calm. Very
okay. All right. So What if we get really weird?
Okay.
And
get really weird. Like, so you're saying we weren't already weird?
No. I mean, really weird. Okay. Where like Nicolas Cage is the antagonist. But you don't know it as you're reading the story. He's mm-hmm. just this like really peaceful painter. But yeah. like as time goes on, and as his like little tidbits in the story, like as you get further in the story, his tidbits start getting weirder and weirder. And you find out that he's actually like painting prophecies and having bad things happen in the story. And he's like he has some sort of like third eye prophecy magic thing where he like paints into existence reality
by just like so we're thinking Heroes, the guy from Heroes who can like paint the future.
Yeah. But less of like a superpower and more of like he has been influenced by some sort of like
dark magic,
ominous dark influence, and he doesn't quite understand what he's doing.
So
and
we're
not like a one-to-one understanding of how he's creating these things happening.
We're definitely getting into the Call of Cthulhu territory then, Lovecrafty and stuff, which I love. Does that make sense for you, AJ? Does that make sense? Nicolas Cage being the like dark prophetic painter who is causing all the problems?
I think so. I was kind of picturing, because you talked about it, him not being obvious as far as being the antagonist. It would be interesting for someone to like notice slight, just subtle, creepy things in his paintings that aren't.
Why does this one flower have something that kind of looks like an eyeball? Oh, no, that's right. No, you're just not seeing that right.
It's a happy little eyeball.
Yeah. At the very core, he draws a really beautiful cathedral, and then like in the back corner of the picture, so small that you can barely tell, there's like an arm coming out and a pool of blood, like someone's dead behind the corner of this. in the painting, something like that. I definitely like the idea of like, this painter who is slowly revealing to us, or to the characters, or both, right? That he's actually not this like super nice, peaceful guy.
So is this story a horror or tragedy?
I mean, most horrors are tragedies, but well, that's probably not true. Actually, horror typically, I guess, ends in the monster actually dying. So yeah, you're right. I don't know. Really, we need to figure out like what the actual problem is and how someone solves it, right? Like the big mega structure of this thing. Like, so if we have like a painter who's inadvertently being, you know, influenced by elder gods or whatever else, right? Creepy dark forces. Like, why and how would someone find out about it? What connection does this painter have to any of the other characters? Why does it matter, right?
Should we pick the basic roles of each?
Probably, right?
First, real quick.
Right, because that's what I'm leaning towards. We need to figure out, like, whose character is actually going to be the hero, because that will help us to figure out what the problem has to be, because the person has to have the skills to solve it, right? So if Dr. Phil is the protagonist of the story, then it has to be solved by farming skills in some sense, right? something that Dr. Phil can offer to this story, as opposed to if it's like an investigation, sort of like legit Call of Cthulhu-esque story, that means Ray Romano's probably the guy who's, right, because he's the reporter.
I lean towards Ray Romano being the main character of the plot, because he's a much easier person to go to all the places.
I think so.
Like, whereas like the farmer is generally going to be farming, and the zoologist is generally going to be in the study, you know what I mean? Like experimenting and doing things. And then the painter is the one who's at their place painting. And so the reporter can go to all of these places and kind of put pieces together of weird things that are happening.
Yeah. That's what I'm figuring too. So my thought then would be, so if we have painter as antagonist.
Okay. All right. No, this is a huge jump.
Okay.
Real quick. But, I just thought, what if the story, is kind of like how the original I Am Legend was written, where what if our three characters all are like contributing to like the Cthulhu I don't know, like these dark influences in our work, and then the reporter is trying to like expose it, but it turns out that Ray Romano is technically the antagonist, because everybody else wants the dark Cthulhu likeness, and he's the only person that's against it. And so it turns out that he's the only person who doesn't want it, And so he's stopping these people from trying to experience what they want to experience.
Well, yeah. So he's only the antagonist if we're seeing the perspective, or if we're seeing the story from the perspective of the painter at that point, right? Or one of the other characters. If we're in Ray Romano's perspective, he's still the protagonist because...
Right. He's still the protagonist, but in this sense, he's the enemy of the story.
I mean, I'm pretty sure...
trying to expose...
I mean, it's still, that's still me. He's still the good guy. He's still the protagonist because.
Oh yeah. No, I agree.
Like, I know what you're going for, but it would only really work if we were like in Dwayne's head the whole time. And he was like, yeah, it's crazy experiment. And, you know, or something like that. And then Ray Romano's like the nosy reporter. He keeps getting everybody's business and we have to keep it away from him. Right. If that's what the story is about, but if it's from the perspective of the reporter digging for the clues, then he has to be the protagonist. And,
It's all my thought, if
the reporter's the main character, then he's just like working on multiple stories that in each involve these other characters, and starts to realize probably through interviewing the painter and looking at some of his work that everything's connected by just like seeing the painter being like, wait, this feels familiar,
right?
But he like, you know, like one of those moments in a movie where it's like, oh, this feels familiar, and then you realize that this painting was like painted before an event occurred that it's like supposed to be like referencing or something.
Right. That's the sort of stuff that I was thinking is like the other three characters are the people that the reporter is writing stories on. And maybe at the beginning of the story, there are three separate stories, right? It's like, this like prodigy painter just moved to this town, this small town that everything is happening in. And I want to write a story about like why he chose to come to this town. And then, you know, the reporter has a story on the scientist who's trying to revolutionize this one thing. And then the story about, maybe the scientist and the farmer are partnering up to do something cool with farming. And he's writing these stories, and then slowly it seems like it's all actually connecting. And we find out, the painter is actually involved. And maybe there's other characters that are also kind of side pieces going around here. And everything eventually comes back to, oh, it's all connected and dark gods and whatever else.
So what's the connection? This dark force can't just like arbitrarily be like affecting the painter, who's then affecting the other characters. What's the problem that has allowed the like Cthulhu whatever dark influence thing to like have its way?
I don't know. The thing I'm starting to see here is that we need to make some sort of shift here to make it not just a Cthulhu story, because right now it's basically just a Lovecraft short story. Like, that's what we're writing. It's just, something weird and dark is happening, and the reporter figures it out and stops it, right? I feel like there needs to be something bigger than that. Something about maybe the reporter himself, like why he... Like maybe he's related to the painter in some way. Like they already have a relationship at the start of the story, and so it's like more personally involved for him.
They're rivals. They went to a university together, and they just have very opposing mindsets on how to affect the culture. Right?
Mm.
You think that you need words, and AJ's character needs the subtlety of painting, right? Like using the arts rather than like language.
Yeah, a difference of like telling people the facts and telling people the way the world is versus letting people interpret things based on art.
I'm thinking left and right brained persons, right?
Yeah.
Like that's what we're seeing here is like the reporter is the logic guy. The like facts are facts and truth is truth. And the painter is constantly being like, well, but anyone can see whatever they want to in my paintings, right? Like, so you have this kind of like weird, like,
which gives him the impetus to be like, you're not seeing anything like, you know, factual in my paintings. Like, you see what you want to see, so you're just making the connections between these things appear.
Right. Well, what do you mean you see a pool of blood?
Yeah, like all of these dark concepts and things that Nicolas Cage is painting, But he always goes back to like a relativistic truth kind of answer as to why it's not actually dark. Is it's like, no, that blood can be interpreted as juice. It could be interpreted as nature.
Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to figure out, like, at this point we need to figure out how the what are they called? How the my brain just died. How the other two characters fit into this.
Like, true.
Why is a farm important, right? Why is a scientist important? Where do they actually fit into you? Because it sounds like we could have an entire story that's just the painter and the reporter going at it philosophically.
Well, I would assume that if the antagonist and the protagonist have like opposing worldviews, right? Mm-hmm. The zoologist and the farmer should be representations of the community, is how they are being affected and influenced by the protagonist and antagonist culture war.
Yeah.
So we could take away like zoologist and farmer and have it be like the manual labor, hardworking class, right?
Oh, and the white collar like people,
white collar class,
the academics versus the yep. rural. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yep. So you know where we're at. This story is set in Moscow. what I mean by that is this story is set in a university town. So it's like a rural community that also has a university, right? And so we have the academics and the farmers, right? The handyman, the lower class blue collar people, the ruralists who are, yeah, and the painter and the reporter are playing, trying to gain the favor of these two groups. And so we have this, yeah, like scholar or scientist or whatever, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is representative of that community. And then we have Dr. Phil the farmer, who is representative of the other community.
Just kind of funny when you take into account their physiques, you would think that the roles would be reversed.
That's kind of what I can't get over of this, is like, I don't know if I would ever take this movie seriously.
With the actors that we've had any of the actors. And I think it's important that we got ideas for the characters based off of the actors, but we don't have to stick with the shape of those people.
Yeah. So I'm thinking
we can go with more personality,
mm-hmm.
Right? Where Dr. Phil is a more see everything as it is kind of a person, and Dwayne is more like the creative, more neutral kind of person.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Dr. Phil is going to be the more down-to-earth character.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dwayne is the high, like, concept. Like,
the lofty one.
Lofty guy. So I'm trying to figure out in my head, like, are we sticking with the, like, painter is influenced by dark forces? And if so, like, what is he actually, like, is what's happening, is this what's happening? Is the painter just going around to different parts of this town, painting the part of the town that he's looking at, and adding something dark to it, and then slowly corrupting the town that way? Is that what's happening? I feel like that's what's happening. Right? Like, he's adding like things to the town by painting a picture of it, and then adding something to the picture, which makes it in some senses real, because of the fact that he's convincing people of this, right? Like, it has to come back. Maybe the painter's, whatever magic he has or whatever is going on here, right? Whatever force he's been able to manipulate here. He's only able to do it when the people believe that he can, or like when he's opened the minds of the people around him to his like weird postmodern ideology, right? Where it's like anything can be true, and once they believe that, he can make it true. And so the more that the reporter is fighting against his weird postmodernism and like saying, no, that's not true, like our church doesn't have like whatever this thing you added to it is, like, and he convinces people of that, the worst that the antagonist is off, the worst off the worse off the antagonist is in his plans, right? That's like the ongoing like conflict between the two is it's a battle of persuasion for the town, and yeah, the painter's doing it by like convincing people that anything can be true and painting it such. And the reporter's just like going back to the truth of like maybe like the historic traditions of the town, and he's reminding people like, no, like we know that this is not true, like not anything can be true. I feel like that's
There could be a scene where they like string up the pastor of the town or the priest of the town, yeah, or whatever, because, oh, there's, you know, this evil thing in his closet, or,
right,
you know, like
no,
dark secret that,
exactly,
he's been hiding this whole time. And so yeah, the painter makes them believe that that's true by, yep, making a painting rather than reporting the truth.
Yep. Yep. That's, I like that. I like that a lot. I'm trying to think, there's one piece of this that we're still missing. So in terms of like, I feel like the reporter shouldn't just be left-brained, right? Like, I feel like if we make the story just about art versus logic, it might muddy the story, like the theme a little bit. Because that's not exactly the point we're making, right? Art is fine, right? It's not, art isn't the problem. So we should, whether or not it's the reporter who has this, or maybe like there's a side character that we're including who is also an artist and is on the reporter side, right? We need to make sure that we maybe draw the line between postmodernism and, you know, I don't want to say modernism, but like, you know, actual truth. And not draw the line between left brain and right brain, right? Because that's not what's at stake here. That would be how it seems at first, certainly. But
I feel like what better way to do that than to have another artist that just like it doesn't have that worldview, that like actually is like, no, that's not what art is about.
Right.
Well, it can be Dr. Phil's character. It doesn't have to be an artist. It can be someone that takes pride in their work,
yep,
and has like symbolism and in what they do, right? There's like, mm-hmm, I farm this way because it's important to remember our ancestors who blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it honestly would even be fun for Dr. Phil's, like this Dr. Phil type character at some point to literally just be out in his field, like draw, like sketching something, right? And just be like, you know, and maybe
or,
like,
or Dr. Phil's daughter
or something like that, right? Like, and just have a contrast between the sort of weird modern art that's going to be happening in the paint in Nicolas Cage's paintings, mm-hmm, right? Where it's like weird shapes and like literally like the epitome of like weird modern art that's trying to like redefine reality. And then you have this normal artist who just sits down in a field and draws a flower, right? And it looks like the flower and that's it, right? So I'm trying to think of like, I definitely like the horror angle here, where like the painter is slowly like maddening people and making them believe anything, making them believe his dark secrets.
Yeah, Nick Cage's character is gonna end up being a cultist.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Yeah, cult leader. And then I'm just trying to figure out exactly how they stop him, besides the obvious thing of like they convince people of the truth. Like, well, how do they do that, right? What actually happens?
I feel like it has to have something to do with like the painter tries to convince the town of something that the farmer did, mm-hmm, by like painting his farm and then like a certain aspect of it, like adding something to it. But then the farmer's just like, well, I was sketching my farm the other day and it actually looked like.
Yeah, that's perfect. No. So what the painter tries to do, right, is he tries to destroy the, like he's slowly trying to destroy this town and he's trying to make people desperate so he can take over or his dark lords can take over or whatever's going on. And he paints the farm, right? He paints the fields of all the crops and he paints them with a horrible disease, right? And they're like, yeah, like you're withering and dying. And yeah, the farmer's daughter or wherever it was had literally just made a painting herself the other day of the farm as it actually is. And it doesn't. And so his magic doesn't work, right? Like it cancels out because she goes to the, like maybe it starts, maybe it, the disease starts and then she brings out the painting and shows the town people and says, no, this is not true. Like, this is the way things are. He has no power over us. Can't you see what he's doing? Like he's trying to destroy us. That's that sort of thing. What holes are we missing here?
I mean, Connor's character. Oh, yeah. There isn't much so far.
Scientist the Rock.
Any ideas?
Well, it seems obvious that he would probably be the person who's starting out on the painter's side, right? By virtue of where he stands in the community. Because he's interested in this new philosophy that the guy's bringing. But he should probably be the key. I mean, both him and the farmer should be the key, right, to defeating the dude. And so the academic should pretty much buy his stuff hook, line, and sinker at the beginning, and then something needs to happen later on that, like, causes him to shift. What do you think, Finn? AJ, have any ideas?
No. Well, I'm slightly lost. maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but what led up to all this? That's what I'm trying to figure out. How would I imagine a painter, they kind of live quiet lives, and I'm trying to see how they would.
What happened to make this guy like this? Yeah.
Well, not just that, but how did he get to the point where he's influencing a town or whatnot? I mean, I'm just, like I said, I'm imagining a painter living this quiet life. And usually painters aren't even known personally. They're known, their paintings are known, but they themselves aren't. You know? And so I'm trying to figure out how he would start, interacting with the people.
Well, I think we have a very interesting answer to that question.
Which is?
The reporter.
Oh, right.
Because they're old buddies from the university.
Yeah.
He starts to put his name out there and be like, look at this guy's awesome art. And like,
telling
people how great his art is.
That brings some culpability on the reporter guy, because he's kind of going to then partially responsible for when bad things start happening. So the issue we do need to find out then, why the painter is bad, right? Like what happened to him? Like, why does he have this power? Why? Like, cause I can definitely imagine him having lived in this town his entire life after they both went to this university. Right. And he's just a quiet painter living his life.
Maybe he gained the influence prior to his corruption, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he was known as this happy... everybody knows Nicolas Cage, the Bob Ross type guy.
Yeah.
You know, and then it starts getting dark, and the town sort of goes along with that darkness.
Right. Yeah, because he's the poster child. Everybody loves him, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What if it's... The Rock's character, what if it's the scholar type who leads him down the path originally? Right. So what if he, you know, the reporter is like, my friend, he's a great artist. Everybody should pay attention to him. This scholar from the university for sure starts paying attention to him and like maybe gives him a scholarship. Brings him to the university itself, like puts him up room and board. Hey, can you teach an art class? Can you like be our artist? Can you paint a fresco on our, like, on the top of our ceiling? Can you, you know, that sort of stuff, right? To get him involved in this university life. But there's something dark and sinister in the university itself that this scholar type is now leading this painter into. And that's where, like, the ideology part of it comes. And maybe we never really truly explain why. Like, I could definitely see, like, a merit to the sort of, like, eerie, it's never exactly explained why the painter has this power, except for the fact that it's just, like, a metaphor for the, like, influence that art can have, and, like, when it's not, when beauty and truth aren't, like, considered rightly. And so the, like, you know, the painter at first, like, or, you know, maybe he's always had this ability. Maybe he's, for whatever reason, and I don't even know if we need to explain it. Well, for whatever reason, his paintings do indeed make reality happen. But because he beforehand always made it happy and good and true to life, the town is super well off, right? And everyone's happy, everything's great, the crops are fine, because he continually upholds that reality. But as soon as his mind starts changing on what truth even is, and he starts messing around with what reality can be in his paintings, that starts to have an effect on this, like, town. And I definitely like it being centered on this town, because there's something creepy about, like, the isolation of, like, it's just this town that's, like, having this happen to them, and no outsider can understand what's going on and that sort of thing. It's definitely a staple of horror stories, for sure. Does that all make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
Yes.
So we have the, like, scholar type be the real bad guy in some ways, but maybe that guy ends up, you know what, maybe that's what it is. Maybe the scholar is the real bad guy the whole time. So because, especially if we have the whole point of the story be, like, the painter coming to grips with the fact that, like, his art is having so much influence over the people of this town that he has to change, right? He has to go back to the way it was. He has to, like, do good again with this stuff. I like the idea of, like, him being slowly corrupted by a Darth Sidious type, right? Like a evil mentor type, and then having to reject him and come back to the reporter's side.
So is the scholar, he's the evil guy that's influencing him.
That's right? What I'm thinking, right? Like, maybe he's okay. The true villain of the story.
Does he know about the painter's abilities to paint?
Maybe that's what is the impetus for the whole thing,
so,
right? Like, he knows.
My thought,
yeah.
This might be a long shot, but I'm just thinking about how a lot of pigment in paint comes from insects and
bug magic.
Maybe it is the zoologist's, like, plan all along to, like he made this specific paint, like, using, like, magical bugs somehow, or, like, bioengineered bugs that can, like, affect, you know, and, like, gave it to this artist specifically and is, like, kind of subconsciously manipulating him.
I love that. I love that because
I adore that idea.
No, so the reason I think the reason I love it is because it actually gives us an actual aesthetic through line,
right?
No, it gives us an aesthetic through line, right? Instead of weird tentacly monsters, it's always insect stuff, right? That's what we start seeing in the background. It's like weird creepy insect stuff.
But then also to make the if we still go with the same solution with the other painting kind of reversing the effects, a lot of pigment also comes from plants. So you could say, you know, that somehow the people on the farm have made their own paint, and, you know, that paint gets used and counters the effects of the other one. Like plant magic and bug magic.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, the bug magic can probably just stay the same. Like, I don't think the bug magic needs to be inherently bad. Right.
Right.
I think it has to do with the ideology of the person using it.
Yeah.
Right? So all he needs to do is change his ways. his mind, his worldview about it, and then the bug magic ends up working for good, right? Instead of
what if the I'm slightly confused about what Dwayne Johnson is. He's a zoologist, bug scientist.
Who knows? I don't know at this point. We haven't.
He chooses some sort of person that is a tool for his evil plot or whatever. And this very simple, jolly, keeps to himself painter that the town loves is easy to manipulate. And so he, befriends him or whatever, and then starts influencing him and sort of becomes his paint supplier with this, with the bug or whatnot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it starts off with the painter saying, like, oh, here's some, you know, high quality paint or whatever, and see what you think of it. And that's when we start to see the good that comes out of that, because and so the guy's like, okay, it's working, so now, you know, phase two or whatever.
It's
start influencing the paintings.
Yep That's perfect. That's definitely the way it would have to be structured, because then he didn't always have this power, but now this scientist is like introducing this thing, and we see it's about what he's painting. And then, we see this slow corruption happen. I love it.
And the farmer, he would definitely be the one that would, I don't know. I can see the farmer and the reporter both being types of people that are, catching on the soonest. The farmer, because he sees nature all the time, he's always working in the field. So he would catch on in that way. And the reporter, for obvious reasons, he's a reporter.
And he's a friend of the dude, right? And got him, got him recognition. So he would be interested in what's going on. He would have seen the paintings and he would be the person who would the most, have access to these paintings and see the effects, be able to notice those sorts of things as he goes around.
Okay, so the reporter would be more noticing the paintings,
and the farmer's noticing the effects on nature.
And so at some point, basically them interacting, that would, when answers would start being
And we can have this thing, the subplot of the reporter talking to the farmer about a story about him, and that's when they get connected and start to notice these weird things that are happening together, and then it all goes back to that painter. I feel like that's the plot, right?
I think so.
That seems pretty.
Now I think, is there any other weird twists or unique character things that we want to put in this to give it a twist, or I don't know. We magic systems, we have these people, and obviously I feel like we don't have any people though that are just the hero. You know what I mean? I feel like everybody has some sort of flaw. So maybe it's unnecessary, but.
I can see the reporter kind of being the first to make all the connections after interacting with the farmer. And then feeling like it's his responsibility to, since he knows, it'd be his responsibility to take action, try to write some things.
Yeah, it's like a Peter Parker versus a Harry Osborn kind of situation.
And the Rock in this situation is Mr. Osborn is the Green Goblin. So I definitely think it probably starts where the reporter notices the weird things are happening, doesn't put it together right away, because of course, who would put together magic paintings, right? But then just starts to investigate, right? Like, he knows something's going on, and so he starts to ask questions and investigate. And then we start to get this conflicting worldview thing where the truth is starting to get a little muddy around here, right? Like normally, you know, people who would normally be incredibly honest and straightforward are suddenly influenced by this strange ideology that's taking over from the university. And he's starting to like get, yeah, like it's rough going as he tries to figure out the truth because no one wants to offer any actual answers. And so he's like, something weird, really weird is going on. And he eventually traces it back to the university and his friend. And he's probably like interacting with his friend the whole time, but I mean, who would in their right mind immediately jumped to, you know, magic paintings are literally like destroying our town. So there's going to be lots of steps that he has to take to actually get to that point. So the thing I'm wondering though, is like, we have the idea about like the alternate painting that cancels out the truth, but I don't know if we've gone further along the line that's probably not what happens, specifically because we had the magic part of it be the paint itself, right? Be this like magical bug paint or whatever. So I really, it probably needs to be like the actual like turning point, like the success that ends up happening at the very end is literally just a persuasion sort of thing, right? So like the reporter has to convince his friend what is true. And that truth is good. And the painter himself is the one who draws the good painting and stops the things from happening, right?
Paints the painting.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't draw a painting.
Well.
Quick question. Why is this zoologist guy so jacked?
Right. Well, obviously he's also been eating the bugs.
Obviously.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I'm just like, I'm imagining a character who like obsessively either via science or magic, some kind of dark magic.
Yeah.
You know, creating these bugs, or maybe not creating them, maybe discovering them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I imagine this person would be so obsessed with their work that they would neglect their body.
Yeah.
So there's got to be, I feel like Dwayne Johnson's figure sort of has to tie into this somehow. Being so jacked, and it's obvious that
maybe he starts out jacked and then or he ends up jacked, one of the two.
Well, no, you know what I think it is, I literally think it's the bug magic stuff, right? He's been eating these bugs, and for him, when he literally just eating them, he can like create an illusion or a lie for himself, right? If that's what it's really about, he can basically feed on these bugs to create a reality where he is jacked. But of course, that's not real, and it won't stand up to a real test, right? So if he actually gets to a fight at some point in this book, he's gonna get completely owned because he's not actually jacked. He just looks jacked.
Okay, what if he's not jacked the entire story, and because his plan obviously gets ruined in the end.
Yeah.
He reverts to this like sort of Bane serum. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, at this point, I feel like we need to maybe put some limits on what the bug magic can actually accomplish because at that point you can basically just make it do anything. But
yeah.
He definitely is the main villain. So whether or not, I mean, I feel like the actual like end piece of the story is probably face off against this academic, and the painter has to draw reality to trap the academic in the truth, right? He can't escape. Maybe that's what the academic is actually doing himself. He's like, he grabs some paint himself and tries to like distort reality so he can like escape the situation, and the painter uses his skills to trap him.
And the great thing about that would be that like the villain is not a painter, so he would not have the same level of skill.
Exactly.
I feel like a good like a reason why he would have to go to the painter and manipulate him in this way is because like you can only accomplish the lie if it is close enough to the truth. Like you can't just like, you know, paint a little, you know, kindergarten level doodle and be like, this is now reality,
because it's not going to line up. Like, no one is going to believe it.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be actually, like, believable in a way.
And it has to be a slow fade, right? Like, it has to be, you have to lead up to the big lies. You have to slowly distort the truth. So when he tries to, throw some paint on a door to create a secret exit for himself, like, it works in the media, but then the painter just shuts him down because he's way better than him. That sort of thing is what I'm envisioning. That seems, I feel like that's the story. That was strange and weird, and I really liked it.
Very disturbing.
Yeah. Obviously, there'd be a lot more to it if we were actually going to write it. But I feel like we have the broad strokes enough that we know. You know, the beginning, the middle, and the end, the character arcs for all the characters, and trying to think of, like, a what we would name this. We named it anything.
Maybe the art of something.
Yeah.
The art of lies.
The art of lying. Yeah.
Or the art of suggestion, maybe. Or perhaps even just the art of subtlety.
The art of influence.
how to corrupt talents and influence people.
Yes.
Some plum play off that title. Yeah, something along those lines. I don't know. Can't think of anything truly great, but cool. Well, that's probably it. Thanks for joining us, AJ. That was fun.
Yeah, this was fun.
That was wacky. I do have a guest for next week already set. We have Jason from my Discord. He's gonna join us for speculative fiction and setting. We'll figure out what we're gonna do for a starting point. But then after that, we're gonna do we're gonna look back at this outline that we had 2 years ago or whatever. a year ago probably at this point, maybe a little bit longer. And try to make a schedule for the rest of the year and actually get to some good topics. We have some good ones that we had in the hopper in this outline that we had originally. We're gonna have to find some guests, I think, to make those truly excellent. I think that's our plan. Try to get some more people on. Ever since the Christian artist started having guests on, we were just like, this is good. We should invite lots of people on to talk with us. Cause there's only so many things you can talk about with the same three people, before you just say the same thing over and over again. And we've done 187 of these. So
crazy.
Okie dokie. Yeah, if you want to check out more of these speculative fiction little brainstorming sessions, just go ahead and go to ChristianArtistShow.com and type in speculative fiction, and you'll pop up a bunch of different stories that we've brainstormed over the years. But you can find us on ChristianArtistShow.com and Twitter at studio_HBreaker. Hellbreaker Studios is the kind of center hub for all of the shows that we do, including this show and Disagree With Me with Angel Rodriguez and Idle Inspiration, the RPG show, RPG talk show I do with David. We also have our little RPG shows that we do on here as well, on this Twitch channel and through my YouTube. So go check out all of that. Thanks for listening. Thanks again for coming on, AJ. That was a blast.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to have to get together and talk stories in a more general sense sometime soon, for sure.
Yes.
Okie dokie. This has been The Christian Artist. We are out. See you guys.